Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and this is pretty much where Solomon is wrapping up his whole book. And remember, Solomon, the king of Israel, what did he have going for him that enabled him to write this book?
Unlimited wealth.
All right, he had unlimited wealth really of his day. All right, what else?
Wisdom.
He had unlimited divine gift of wisdom given to him by God. All right, what else did he have? Well, time and a power. He's king, and so he has authority to do anything he wants. Who's going to say, well, no, you can't spend money on that? No, I'm the king. I can do what I want, okay? So he goes through this grand experiment trying to find out, what's the purpose of life? What am I here for? What gives real value? And so really we've been following his journal, his diary of his experiment about trying to find some real purpose to life. And of course, in one answer, what did he come up with?
Vanity.
It's vanity. There is no real value of life on this earth. And again, he's doing this test with a view as if there is no God. And the catchphrase that he uses is what? Life under the sun. Exactly. So he's not saying there isn't a God, but if we were just to look at earth as it is and trying to find some kind of purpose for being here, life living under the sun as if there is no God, he said, there isn't anything. Yes. You had your hand up? Oh, I thought you were waving. Were you trying to catch a fly? All right. Okay. All right, so there's where we were. But when he gets down to it, he makes some real practical applications. And but then he comes back and he's going to interject God in the end. But he began by saying this. This is in chapter 1 where we started, in verse 2. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. And you might think, this is going to be a depressing book. In one way, it kind of is, but actually it's eye-opening. Because it gives you a perspective that frees you from being trying to find something in this world when the answer, you're not going to find it. You're chasing the wind, so why waste time? And so I think the book's very empowering that way. So the question is, what advantage does a man have in his work which he does under the sun? And the answer to that is what? None. He has no advantage. And so now he gets down to chapter 11 and verse 9. And he says, you know, this is what you need to do. If you're just going to live life on this earth and be happy, rejoice during your childhood. Rejoice. Follow the impulse of your heart. Because you're not going to be young long, and you're pretty soon get old. Everything you thought about doing and want to do is going to pass you by. Now, that was last week's lesson where Solomon does this wonderful job describing the old man. You know, the windows go dim. What does that refer to? Your eyes. You don't see. You know, you stoop over when you walk. There's always a noise outside because you're all scared. The caper berry, your sexual libido goes away. What's the almond blossom flowering? Gray hair. I see a couple few of you with almond blossom tops, all right? And you say, well, at least I got some almond blossoms. You're bald, okay? Yeah. Yeah, look at this. He's perpetually in bloom, isn't he? But that's okay, because it happens to all of us, doesn't it? And if you think, oh, yeah, I got lots of time, he says, no. Let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. So many youth waste their life because they're miserable and depressed, and it's probably because they haven't learned the life lesson of Ecclesiastes. They taught in the world that we're just a bunch of bald animals. There is no life after death, and you got to find purpose and meaning right here. And guess what? They're smart enough, I can't find it. None of it makes sense. I see injustice. I see things turned around. All the things that Solomon records. And so they're miserable. They don't have a pleasant childhood. He said, follow the impulse of your heart, the desires of your eyes. But remember one thing, what? Here he's introducing the answer to everything. Yeah, God's going to judge you for how you live your life. So don't be naive to think life living under the sun is all there is. There is life above the sun, above that arch where God lives. And so your days of your childhood are fleeting, but here in chapter 12 now, we're going to see him introduce the word remember. Every day when you get up, remember. Remember your Creator. Remember Him in the days of your youth, before those evil days come. That's the old days when you say, I don't have any delight in life. If some people say that, say, man, I'm just ready to die. Now, is that a sad, pessimistic life or point of view? No, he said, I've done it. My life, it aches. I'm tired. I'm suffering. I just want to move on. Now, if you have a hope in heaven, you can say that. Otherwise, it is kind of sad. So notice he says in chapter 12, verse 1, remember your Creator. In verse 6, he says, remember Him. So the question is, how am I going to remember Him? How am I to remember Him? Well, the answer is given at the end of the chapter, and there's where is where Brian left off last week, and that's where we're going to make get our lesson from this morning. So verse 13, the conclusion, he says, when all has been heard. So in other words, you write all you want. He's always said, you know, many books writing, it's endless, it's weary to the body. But he says, when you've said all you've said, you've interviewed all the wisest men in the world, and you put it all together, here's the conclusion. When all has been heard, fear God. Keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. And he's done. Now, that's an interesting way to end the book, because it's not like there's no postscript or anything. He just says, here's the answer. And if you get this, you figured it out. If you don't get it, you know, you messed up. And so let's write down the things that he says to do. First of all, what? Fear God. And then second of all, what? Keep. And I'll just put the commandments. And then what's the third thing that he gives as a reason for these two? All right. So remember or keep, think. I'll just put think, judgment. Always be aware that you're going to be held accountable for how you live your life on earth. So does the way you live your life matter? Yes. No God, no judgment doesn't matter. But if there is a God and there is a judgment, it does matter how you live your life. It's the biggest difference maker there is. And everything's riding on that. Yes. That's right. All right. So if we want to qualify, then Jesus talks about that. All those things are hidden will be revealed. Nothing that is secret will not be made known. So yes, everything in your life that you live. And so every person. So there's his answer of how to remember Him in this the last part. He says, fear God. Keep His commandments, and we'll come back to this idea that applies to every person, and remember the judgment. So let's go back and look at the book in its entirety and insert God back into the equation where he looked and his answer was, that's vanity. Now if you put God back into it, let's see the purpose and the value in living life. Because I don't want you leaving this book with thinking, oh, life's just a bunch of, you know, worthlessness. But with God back in it, it all makes sense. So you understand what I'm trying to do here. Well, you say, well, I'm not sure. Let's go all the way back to chapter 2 when his grand experiment. He says, remember he said, I'm going to test myself. And we know that he tested himself with pleasure, with wisdom and folly, materialism. That included drinking and also building parks and architectural projects and gathering riches and planting gardens and having many women, right? That was his big test. And he went after that test. And, of course, the answer was, there's no lasting remembrance of the wise man as a fool, inasmuch as the coming days will all be forgotten, how the wise man and the fool will die. So I hated life. For the work which had been done of the Son was grievous to me, because everything is futility and striving after the wind. Now, if you just stop there, and there's the answer to his grand experiment, like, wow, maybe there is reason to be depressed. What am I here for? Okay, now let's interject God back in it. How does that make it different? How does that make this his answer different? Yes?
Ecclesiastes 2:24, for there is nothing better for a man that he should enjoy the fruit of the labor of his hands.
Okay, all right.
Something didn't exist. Here's a bare piece of ground, break the concrete forms out there, and next thing you know, it's a month, 2 months later, you got a house.
That's right. Okay.
He'll,
you find pleasure in what you're doing. Yeah, and that's right.
That's a good thing. You have a future.
Okay.
You have now, which is you get up every morning and do whatever you do and go to bed. But, you know, someday that won't be there. But
okay.
With God, you have a future.
Here he says there's no what?
Remembrance.
Is there a future when there's no remembrance? Now, you can go to Israel now, and you can find some of the stones of the First Temple era that perhaps were laid by Solomon in his day. Not physically himself, but he had done. But other than that, what about his gardens? You see any of them? Any of his wives living? No, I mean, anything else? No, we know him, but often we don't even know him for the good things. We know him for the bad things. But without God, he said, I hated life. Now you put God back into it. There is a future, right? There is something to look forward to. There is a remembrance. The things you do matter, because there will be a judgment of how you conducted yourself on this earth, whether you made the most of your time and you were faithful and righteous or not. It's the biggest game changer. This is sad, isn't it? This makes purpose in your life, okay? So there's going to be what we want to do here. Here he says, the wise man and the fool alike die. So we'll get to that in the next one, where he says, I said to myself, concerning the sons of men, this one always sticks with me, chapter 2 and verse 18. It repeats himself later, the same thought. He said, God is testing them, that's man, in order to see them they're all but beasts. Now what do you mean, we're all but beasts? Now remember, we're looking life under the sun as if there is no judgment. No God, right? He says, okay, the fate of sons of men and the fate of the beasts is the same. What's the same similar fate? Yeah, he says, as one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath. There's no advantage for the man over the beast because you're both what? Dead. He said, it's vanity. So you look at this wise man Solomon and an old cow. And he's saying, you are no better off than that old cow. Why? Because when you're dead, there's no planting in Sheol. There's no work in Sheol. That's the place of the dead. You're dead as a cow. No one remembers you. And what advantage do you have over that cow?
None.
He says, life's vanity. Can you see that? They all go to the same place. Now, when I was younger, kids in school, they like to have fun. No, actually, they're mean. They tease, but I get over it. So they would call me old heifer. And this one guy, oh, heifer cow. They all call me old cow. All right? And I'm like, fine. Is that the best you can do? If you want to, all right. But actually, is it not true? If there is no God, do I have any advantage over a cow? None. None. Now, you put God back into it, and we will. It'll change it. Yes?
Also addresses that a little bit in 1 Corinthians 15, when he's talking that if there is no resurrection, if there is no life after this,
that's right.
Then why are we doing this? We're evolving, we must be pitied because of the persecution.
Exactly.
Suffering. So if there's no resurrection, if there's no life after,
that's right.
This is all pointless.
Yeah. So people in the world today try to fabricate causes to live for. And I say that because they can be very passionate about it, whether it's saving the earth, marching for some kind of rights, or I don't know, you just name them. There are all sorts of them, right? Now, in them of themselves, they're fine. Let's be good stewards of the earth, correct? Let's protect the environment. Let's stand up for people's rights. Let's try to eliminate, Yeah, and disease. Let's vaccinate everyone in the world for polio. You know, all those things, that's right. But let's suppose there is no God. What good do those causes do in the long run? They prolong misery here, all right? He's going to say that because he says, you know, there's a lot of injustice in this life, and I can't do anything about it. Yes. In the end, so you get vaccinated, you live a few more years, but when you're dead like the dead cow. Now let's put God back into it. Which one of these makes a difference here? Well, all of them. All of them, right? If you fear God more than you fear life, and you understand that I better listen and obey him because I'm going to be held in judgment, is that going to affect if you live righteously or unrighteously? Is that going to affect how you live life? Are you going to live it like drunkenness and immorality, or are you going to walk a little more circumspectly? Is it going to keep you looking up and trusting him because you know he's in charge and you don't care what you care, but you're not going to get lose sleep over what the evil kings of the world do. See, when you put God back into this picture, this is all different. How you live your life is vitally important because when you die, you continue to live. You're not like the cow. It makes everything different. And we have to be people that start thinking that way every day. Remember the judgment. There will be life after this. Life on this earth. Yes.
Well, two things. If there isn't anything after this earth, I'd rather be the cow. He doesn't worry about anything.
Well, you can make a case for that, right?
But going back to Job, early in Job, he sort of expressed this idea because he had God's life and he experienced the good and he experienced the bad. But what he said when it all happened, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, bless.
That's right.
Or
David, how did he deal with death? The death of his loved one. What did he say? He was fasting and very humbled, wouldn't eat. They were worried from him. When they gave him news that he died, he got up and cleaned himself, ate. And what did he say?
When they were still here, I could
pray for him. And then what? He will not come to me. But I will go to him. He understood there is life above the sun. Right? You're not just a dead cow or a dead dog. I have an opportunity. If I fear God and keep his commandments, I'll be reunited with my son. Isn't that a beautiful thought? It also gives purpose to life. Yes?
When you put God back in the picture too, Jack, then having a wife, having children, enjoying eating a common meal, enjoying the company of others, with God knowing these are blessings from God.
That's right. Exactly. It does. All right. So let's look at another one in chapter 3 and verse 14. Here's the first hint that he gave. He didn't give the conclusion to the end, but it was there all along. He said, I know that everything God does will remain forever. There's nothing to add to it. There's nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that men should fear him. God has so constructed this life on this earth that you can't figure it out. You can't fix things. There will be disorder. Things will be upside down. There will be injustice. You will die. And it's all made that way by God so that you would what? Look up. Stop keeping your head focused on the earth and start looking above. And fear him. He's the only one that's in charge. He's the only one that has the answers. He's the only one that can make it right. And if you're trying to make sense out of this life here and make some justice and have right and wrong, have the perfect Messiah for a president, is that ever going to happen? When I say Messiah, you know what I mean? You know, truth and justice and never speaks wrongly and only does what is right for the people. People are always voting for the perfect Messiah. We have a perfect Messiah, don't we? Jesus Christ, and he lives what? Above the sun. And as long as you're looking down here, you're going to be severely disappointed, but that's why he says, God's fixed it. So you look above. All right? What was Babel all about? Who was Babel, the city of Babel?
Trying to reach God.
But actually, there's more than going on than that. taken a name for themselves. They're trying to make a centralized government, a central people, when they're supposed to spread around the world and multiply. They're trying to fix the world's problems themselves by a society and government. We don't need you, God, and we'll build this tower to prove to the world that we can unite and we can fix your problems. Just look to man and look to government. Has man been doing that ever since? Yes, we can fix things. Look to us. We'll take care of you. We promise that. And they fail miserably all the time, don't they? And God, how did God deal with that attempt to rebel against him and take control for themselves? Poof, just like that. All of a sudden, you can't talk to someone, so you had to leave and go your own way. Yeah, who's in charge? Yeah. Yeah, okay. Thanks for that political comment. That's true, though. All right? So exactly, you're right. He looked at oppression. Here, even as king, he couldn't fix it himself with unlimited power and authority. I looked again at the acts of oppression which were done under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed and had no one to comfort him. No one. Now, is that true today, even in America? There are some people, there's no one that will stand up and take care of them and come to their defense. Rise up and try. But the answer, will there always be some people that slip through the cracks? And then you go around the world, there's multiple people that are being oppressed, and nothing's done for them. They had no one to comfort them. And he said, I saw their tears. This is depressing for the king to say this. He said, I couldn't do anything. And on the side of the oppressors was power, but they had nobody to help them. That's why he said, it's all vanity. How does that change when you put in chapter 12? There is someone that's going to comfort them. He will make it right because there will be a judgment, and those that afflict you will be judged, and you will be given comfort finally. Even though it seems like it's never ending and it's overwhelming, Paul says to the Christians in Corinth, you're going to be afflicted just for a little while. And he calls it a light, momentary affliction compared to what? The eternal, wonderful riches and joy you're going to have. When you compare the two, the glory you're going to receive, it's light, momentary affliction. Even if it seems overwhelming. See, what changes and gets you through life is knowing this isn't all there is. God's going to take care of it. He's going to judge him. I don't have to worry about it. And if I live righteously, I'm going to have, finally, some comfort myself if I fear God and keep his commandments. It changes everything, doesn't it? All right. Yes. Yes.
It's raining.
Yes.
It's been raining forever and ever, right? And the grass is growing out in the fields. We go down the I-5.
It's beautiful.
The trees are blooming.
Yes.
The flowers are blooming. In Oregon,
yes.
So we are blessed.
Yes.
We got the rain. But wait till summer.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. We don't live in a paradise. That was destroyed in the garden. But we will live in a paradise. Yes. Right? California was really beautiful because all the green fields everywhere you're going, because it's been raining there, but it won't be summer. It'll be just another month. It'll all be dry. Grants Pass, same way, beautiful and all that. The green rolling, looks like Ireland, some of it. But that won't be long. But yes, you're right. All right, so you see that? When you put God back into all these chapters, you go, man, I can do life. Because I know there's more to life than just what's here under the sun. Okay? So then in chapter 7, remember that there's a time for everything? It's a beautiful chapter, and he says, that's in chapter 5, but then he goes about, it's better to go to house of a mourning than to go to house of feasting. And he says, because that is, in other words, death, is the end of every person, and the living take it to heart. So what is he hinting at here when we get to the conclusion? Why did he say it's better to go to the house of mourning than to a party? If you're going to die and you're just going to be a dead cow, and that's it, who cares, right? What's he hinting at? Which part of here? Number one, two, or three? Probably three, mostly. The living taken to heart, you're going to be judged after you die, so you better think about how you're living, keeping his commandments right now. Because there will be a judgment, and if you don't think about the coming test, you're not going to live appropriately. So who's in school right now? Oh, Dane is. Who has semester tests and final exams? Oh, that would be Dane. And so when's the time to study for him? Don't answer that question. Not the night before like I did, and that's why I got dropped out of college. No, there's other reasons. But we all do that. We're procrastinators, right? But it doesn't work in life. You got to think about death. Because you are going to die. It's a great equalizer. And if you remember these three things, then death takes on a total different meaning. It's actually deliverance. It's where I get my reward. It's where I get to meet God and hear well done. And for all the things that I dealt with on this earth in a right way. So, the game changer. Someone had their hand up. Oh, is that you, Brian? No, you're thinking about
enjoying food,
that's
laughter,
right.
Enjoying each other's company. But when you go to a funeral, I don't know about the rest.
That's right.
I think that's going to be me in a few years, laying in a casket.
Yeah. Does he say it's wrong to go to a party?
No.
We had a potluck on Sunday when I was down there in Clovis, and they had over 100 people. It was outside because it wasn't raining. And it was a great time. Lots of food and great company and people playing volleyball, and they were fishing for catfish in a pond. No, it's great, but he's saying it's better to go to a funeral because it makes you think of these things, right? And this applies to everyone, all right? So then we look at later in chapter 7, verse 15. He said, I've seen everything during my lifetime. Is everything a generalized statement? Now, he hasn't seen everything that's ever happened, but everything falls under the same categories. It's just like, oh, I've seen this story. It's just different players in a different scenario, but it's the same story. And that's pretty much in life. We think, oh, there's something new under the sun. He said, there's nothing new. And if you get sick, people have been sick before. Well, no one's been sick like I have. It's the same principle, isn't it? Well, I got rich. Well, people have been rich before. People have lost their riches. So he says, when it comes to wickedness, there's a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. Is this fair? No, it's not. It's not fair, but it happens, right? And sometimes it can get you so upset, like, this is not right. We got to do something about it. And I hear people vent about this issue, and rightly so, but it almost destroys their life, their whole... What changes this in 1, 2, and 3? What makes this okay? You're going to be able to deal with it. Again, a judgment. That wicked man who lives a long life while the righteous man ends up dying early, God's going to make it right. He will live forever. And the wicked man, he'll be held accountable for everything done. He won't have that life eternal. He'll have a life of eternal judgment. When you understand that, it makes you swallow. You don't ever accept the injustices in life, but you can understand there always been, and God's going to take care of it. I will just keep pushing forward, right? I'm not going to let it make my life miserable. That's a choice, isn't it? But the thing that gives you the power to do that choice is having this view of life above the sun, all right? So we'll look at a couple more, and we'll be done here. Chapter 8. Although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, this is very similar to the one we just looked at, still I know it be well for those who... So here he gave another hint that if you fear God, keep his commandments, even though you suffer on this life, it's going to work out and you're going to be so happy that you did. But it will not be well for the evil man because he did not fear God, nor keep his commandments, And judgment is a scary thing for him. He will not lengthen his days like a shadow. Why? Because he did not fear God. The biggest problem in our society today is not because people aren't Christians. That's secondary. It's not because they don't follow the Bible. That's, you know, secondary. What's the biggest problem in our society, at least in American culture? People don't what? They don't fear God. And again, because we, again, it's to systematically remove God from the schools, from the public marketplace, from the political discourse. And so largely, a lot of people have no consciousness of God when it comes to their decision-making processes. And so when they're going to come up with do's and don'ts, who gets to decide those do's and don'ts? Is it God? No, man decides for themselves, and usually, always, they graduate the side of what they want to do, what pleases them, right? And that's the biggest problem in our society today. Youth, children, anywhere, it's they don't fear God. A healthy respect and fear, not just reverence and respect, but fear. So, yes. Yeah. That's right. Exactly. What was the comment you made last week in class about fear?
Well, it was actually a quote from Oswald
Yes.
Chambers. And Oswald Chambers said that if you fear God, you don't fear anything else. But if you don't fear God, you fear everything.
Did you hear that? When you fear God, you don't fear anything else. But when you don't fear God, you're left fearing everything else. We're afraid of everything. Yes. Oh, you had your hand up. Well, that means it's not, I would think it's I'm a follower of God. I believe in him. That's right. That's wrong because God says so. You're open about it. It's not transparent. Yes, it's being a Christian and not ashamed. That would be our vernacular, right? Confessing him publicly. And so. Yeah, I think it's together. Those who fear him and fear him openly. Because some people are closet fearers of God. Okay, you can say that. They don't want to be known for that. John chapter 12, verse 42 and 43. Some of the rulers believed in Christ, but they were not confessing because they'd be put out of the synagogue and they loved the approval of men more than the approval of God. Wayne. Yeah.
Have an effect. And just to stay away from it and say it's us versus them. Now we've got to become them and change those kinds of laws and rules and attitudes by being involved.
No, as much as we have the opportunity and ability, let's go for it. I agree. Yeah. So, enough just time, a couple more. In chapter 8, he goes, there's futility. In other words, these are all the things that just bugged Solomon, if you would. You know what I mean, bugged? He's just like, this is not right. This is not fair. This is vain. This is unjust. Well, here's a futility which is done on earth. There are righteous men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. And there are evil men to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I say it's futility. This is not right. It's not fair. Then he goes, I've taken all this to my heart and explained to the righteous men, wise men, their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him. So what's he saying here? He concluded. Sometimes the righteous get punished, the wicked get blessed. What's his answer? But sometimes it doesn't work that way. Right here. One's life, his deeds are in whose hands? Because we got this principle, and it's a general rule, whatever you sow, you're going to reap, except for the time when you don't reap it. So you sow goodness. Sometimes you don't reap goodness, you reap badness. He's saying that's exactly what, this is not fair, this is futile. Why did I sow it if I get bad? And sometimes you sow evil and you get goodness. So the rule only works until it doesn't work. He said, well, that doesn't make sense and it's not a rule. He says, I figured it out. Your life is in whose hands? So what? Fear God. Don't think that you just follow the rules and make your way through life, because I follow the rules. Don't think you can just play the game and, you know, have a system and everything work out. No, God is so fixated that you'll never fix it or work it out. You need to fear him. And that's what he's saying here. Your life's in his hands. It's not in yours. You can be in charge to a degree. Do what he asks you to do. But trust him. Boy, that's easy. Trying to figure it out for myself is hard. Trusting him is easy. Let him figure it out. Yes?
Sometimes the hardships that befall us are the catalyst for someone else to come to him.
Okay.
They see us deal with the hardships. They see maybe it's that wake-up call, like going to a funeral. Oh, that could be me. Maybe I need to get my life in order. Maybe it's the hardships that we have to deal with that is what is necessary for someone else to come to God.
Yeah, if you didn't hear it, Rochelle was saying sometimes our hardships and injustice is the picture that other people need to see for they to come to God themselves. How we deal with it and see how God turns it around too in our lives. That was my version of what you said. Okay. Here he goes back to where he started. There's one fate for the righteous and one for the wicked. First it was the animal, the dog, and the person. Now he's saying the wicked and the righteous. This is the great equalizer. And this, to me, it makes me just feel I can be okay with it. Because if there was not a judgment, then the wicked would eternally get away with their wickedness, right? It would not be right. And there's no way you can get over that. But since I know there's one fate for all men, they're all going to die. Now, if that was it, we got a problem. But we know there's going to be a judgment, and that's going to fix and take care of everything. Right? So it's like someone talking trash before a game. That never happens. You know, and we're just going to beat you down, all this. It's like, just wait, just wait. What did he say? What did you tell him to wait for? Wait till the game. I mean, you can talk all you want, but wait till the game, and then there'll be true judgment. All right? I never understand when someone's down by 30 points in a basketball game, and they make one shot, and they start talking trash to the other guy. It's just, look at the scoreboard. And you're talking trash to me. It makes no sense, does it? But people do it all the time. All right? We don't talk trash anyway, except if you're having fun with your friends. But see how this makes it all right while you're living on this earth even, okay? He goes, now, whatever your hand finds to do it, do with all your might. Just have a blast while you last. Remember we talked about that. But then what? What do you got to remember? Keep his commandments. Don't be stupid. While you're having fun, because just enjoy life, because you're going to have opportunities to enjoy life, and then it'll be days of misery. You'll get through those too, but enjoy the good days while they come. Enjoy your youth. Follow it. But remember, there's going to be a judgment. And so then he goes on, just as you don't know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, you don't know what God's doing. Do we? Does he send us memos explain what's going to happen this next year or this next decade? No. So remember, he's ultimately in charge. Fear him. He alone knows the future. Fear him. There are general rules, but they don't always apply. They don't apply when they don't apply. Trust him. He cares. He'll take care of it. There will be a judgment. See, the only thing that makes sense are these three things when it's all said and done. It gives meaning and purpose to life, and it makes you sigh with contentment. Whew, I can get through this. It's not my job to be God anymore. So now we're back where we started from. Chapter 11. Rejoice. Be happy. That's what the idea of pleasant. Follow the impulse of your heart. If you want to do something, do it. Because you live just a little while on this earth, and pretty soon you're going to be like, oh, Bruce. I should never have done that, made fun of someone. and then it's too late, right? But remember what? Remember, God will bring you to judgment. So, last couple things. Why did that happen? That's the most important part of that. So, here's how you remember God. This is where we started, now it's where we finish. When it's all been said, fear God, keep His commandments, remember the judgment. Two other things we want to add to it. First of all, this is a universal application. It applies to every person. No one escapes this. So it's the great equalizer. And the judgment, he says what? Every act. So it's a universal judgment. So when you know that, both sides, it applies universally to everybody and every act, so no one's going to escape, it can give you peace of mind. But also it gives you direction. I know how I have to live my life now. It's going to be a life that fears God. This could be the hallmark. And it could be said one thing when you die at your funeral, that Jack feared God and lived his life accordingly. That's probably the greatest thing you could say about anyone. Because then they're going to keep their commandments. They are going to love one another. They are going to do what Christ asks us to do. And you're going to have this great hope. There's no grief in their passing because they just were birthed now into heaven. And so that's why this book is so important. Here he said in chapter 2 of verse 11, there's no profit, but there is much profit when you live life above the sun. So any questions or thoughts as we bring it to a close? All right, thank you. I hope you remember Ecclesiastes and use it to share others as well.